Good afternoon. Welcome to the Second Court of Appeals. Your panel for this first case is to my right, Justice Ann Gardner. To my left, Justice Bonnie Sutterth. I'm Leanne Dauphineau. We'll hear the first case, then we will recess briefly, and a different panel will come hear the second case. And those are the two cases set for oral submission today. I understand both sides are ready? All right, then if you'll call the case, we'll get started.
The court will now call Harlan J. Friend versus Tracy M. Friend. May it please the court. Mr. Jimmy L. Werner Jr. will argue for the appellant. Mr. Stacy A. Dunlop will argue for the appellate.
All right, Jimmy, ready? Come on up.
May it please the court, as the bailiff indicated, I'm Jimmy Werner, and I have the honor of representing the appellant today. Let me briefly give the court a background of this case. The Friends, Mr. and Ms. Friends, obtained a home equity line of credit in 2005 from Bank of America to open a restaurant. The home that was the subject of the home equity line of credit was the party's house in Frisco. Skip forward 3 years. The parties were divorced by agreed final decree of divorce, November 7, 2008. Ms. Friend was awarded the Frisco house in the divorce. Mr. Friend was ordered to pay the home equity line of credit, which at that time the decree recites, had an amount of $204,000. The parties had a second house in Florida, which was to be sold by agreement. Ms. Friend was to pay the upkeep. Upon sale, the proceeds of that sale would be used to pay off the home equity line of credit after giving Ms. Friend credit for the upkeep, and anything left over would go to a trust fund for the children.
Well, the decree clearly anticipated that there would be proceeds from the sale, and if your client was drawing on that line of credit in the interim, doesn't that thwart the purpose of the decree, the agreed decree to begin with?
I'm not so sure I would go so far as to say thwart the purpose, Your Honor, because Mr. Friend ultimately would be responsible for repaying those amounts that he took out on the home equity line of credit. And one of my contentions today is that rather than what amounts to a modification of the party's prior decree of divorce, the appropriate remedy would have been an accounting once the Florida house was sold.
But the agreed decree contemplated that there would be proceeds from the sale.
I agree.
If he continued to draw on the line of credit, that would eat away at the equity. Therefore, there wouldn't be any proceeds if he continued to do that.
The home equity line of credit was on the Frisco house, and the house to be sold was the Florida house.
Okay.
And the Florida house, the Hardys clearly did contemplate getting some money out of it. In any event, Ms. Friend, under the decree, was to pay $634 per month to Mr. Friend, and he was to match it, and they were to pay that toward the reducing the amount of the home equity line of credit. Then we get to the facts that bring us forward to the lawsuit. Mr. Friend initially paid more than the $634 per month on his part and paid Ms. Friend's money that she had given to him toward the loan as well. However, he lost his job, and he began paying only part of the $634 that he received from Ms. Friend, and occasionally none of that money. Mr. Friend also took, as we were just discussing, three draws on the home equity line of credit, totaling some $52,000. In the meantime, on multiple occasions, Ms. Friend asked Mr. Friend, tell me what the balance of the HELOC is. How do I get in touch with them? Please tell me the status of payments and so forth. And each time he rebuffed her. And in fact, in one email exchange on March 25th of 2010, which I believe is Plaintiff's Exhibit 4, Mr. Friend wrote to Ms. Friend that he did not have to account to her, that he had paid the $634 per month, and that the decree did not specify the terms, conditions, and so forth of the loan, of the usage of it. And he said, you have to trust me, even though you don't like or want to do that. Ms. Friend testified that she attempted to refinance the Frisco house, but she was told she would have to roll the balance of the home equity line of credit into a new loan. They would not tell her the balance. Mr. Friend would not tell her the balance. At a court hearing in 2013, Ms. Friend testified that she became aware for the first time that Mr. Friend had not paid the monies over as he's supposed to, and that he had taken out draws on the home equity line of credit. Ms. Friend sued Mr. Friend for breach of contract and also under some tortious theories. The trial court's judgment stated that Mr. Friend would be independently and solely responsible for payment of the home equity line of credit over $177,360.40. It's unclear how the court came up with that amount, but that's what the court ordered. The court also assessed exemplary damages of $25,000 and awarded attorney's fees of a little bit over $26,000. Let me divide the argument into two parts. First, I want to talk about the shortfalls on the $634 payments. Mr. Friend didn't pay all of that when he should have. The total that he did not pay, that he should have paid, is $13,045.87. Mr. Friend breached the contract. It is true. However, in a breach of contract suit, there can be no punitive damages awarded unless tortious conduct exists apart from the facts giving rise to the breach of contract. And in this case, there were none. The court did find that Mr. Friend had misrepresented the payments on the loan to Ms. Friend, and that's correct. But in our brief, we have discussion of several points of common law fraud. But the most important one, and the one I want to emphasize here, is that Ms. Friend could not have justifiably relied on what Mr. Friend told her. On numerous occasions, he refused to cooperate with her at all, and yet she continued to send him the money. And we respectfully submit that that can amount to fraud because her reliance was not justified.
Because he was unreliable?
He would not give her the information she requested. She asked him for the amount of the home equity line of credit loan. He wouldn't tell her. My understanding, home equity line of credit has to be signed by both spouses, but apparently the bank would not tell her anything about the loan, and he would not take steps to obtain information to give to her or to ask the bank to give her information. In short, she was being stonewalled. And it's difficult to stand here and argue that stonewalling is a good thing, and I'm not, but it doesn't give rise to fraud because she could not justifiably rely upon what he was saying, and therefore the $25,000 in punitive damages is unwarranted.
Unless there's a cause of action for conversion.
Well, that's the next thing. That's the next thing we need to talk about, because that that is the primary argument about the draws on the home equity line of credit. The argument that we've seen is that Mr. Friend not only converted the $634 or part of it each month, but he converted the equity in the home equity line of credit by taking draws upon it. Now, it's true he did draw down the equity on that, but a cause of action for conversion applies to tangible items. It cannot apply to a line of credit. I've mentioned this in our reply.
But it can apply to segregated funds.
That's true, Your Honor.
So if you tender a check to someone to pay for something and they don't pay that, that can be conversion. There are cases that say that.
It could be conversion of the, but the act itself was not forwarding it. It wasn't stealing it. His act was not forwarding it to the home equity line of credit loan at the Bank of America. So I'd respectfully submit that under those facts, it would not amount to conversion. It's certainly not his.
What did he use it for?
He used it apparently for living expenses. I don't believe the record reveals that.
So he did convert it. He converted it to his own use. It was earmarked for payment to the home equity loan, and he converted it to his use. How's that not conversion?
I'd suggest to the court that that amounts to money, and I don't believe conversion permits conversion of money.
Well, except when the money has been earmarked. When the money is earmarked for something, then funds money can be converted. There are cases that say that.
Well,
if they're misapplied.
I'll defer to Your Honor on that point. Nevertheless, on the home equity line of credit, there could not be conversion because there was no amount of funds to be segregated in some fashion. In fact,
well, at that point, though, wasn't it already awarded to her as her separate property, the property that was the collateral for the home equity loan?
That is correct, Your Honor, and he did encumber that property by borrowing, and the divorce decree should have said that he's not to draw on any more. Now, I didn't draw this decree of divorce, but it doesn't prohibit him from doing that. Our assertion, therefore, is he did not breach a contract not to draw on the home equity line of credit. But let's assume for the moment that he did breach a contract and he drew on that home equity line of credit. The question becomes, what's the proper amount of damages? And this is a very tough part of the case because originally the divorce decree back in 2008 said Mr. Friend would have to pay the home equity line of credit of $204,000. Then at trial, rather than granting judgment against Mr. Friend for the amount of the $634 he had not paid on, and in some fashion accounting for the home equity line of credit, the court ruled that he would be required to pay anything on the home equity line of credit over $177,000 odd dollars. There wasn't any evidence at trial on the current amount of the home equity line of credit. The record is entirely silent on that. And I'm my understanding is there's an...
Well, who would have provided that information? Your client wasn't talking.
Oh, at the time of trial, certainly that could have been provided by examination under oath or subpoena from the bank. But when I would respectfully say that if the petitioner, the plaintiff, is trying to recover under breach of contract, it's incumbent upon the plaintiff to prove the plaintiff's case. And there simply wasn't any evidence. We don't know. I understand counsel has a theory, but we don't know from the record how that amount was achieved, whether it takes into account interest, payments on principal. We don't know. I would also assert to the court that the trial court improperly, by making that ruling, modified the divorce decree because it referenced the divorce decree. We're going to take the amount he has to pay from $204,000 down to $177,000. And as the court knows, one cannot change the division of property in a divorce decree. We assert that what the court should have done is enter judgment against Mr. Friend for the $13,000 that he did not pay to the Bank of America on the home equity loan, the money that Ms. Friend had given him, and that we suggest that the case be reversed for that reason. And at that time, rather than enter an order that Mr. Friend would be required to pay this $177,000, anything over it, the trial court should conduct an accounting of the home equity loan, and if and when the Florida house is sold, apply that loan like it's supposed to, and there's no question that Mr. Friend would be responsible for the home equity advances that he took. So our suggestion is the court impose the wrong remedy if the court correctly found that there was a breach of contract. So we suggest the court be reversed and remanded with instructions. I've finished my presentation unless the court has questions.
Do you take issue with the injunction that was ordered for him not to take any more money out of the home equity line of credit?
We don't, Your Honor. At trial, that was an agreement that was made before the trial even started. He agreed to that as an accommodation.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Stacy.
May it please the court. Your Honors, please forgive me. This is my first time arguing in appellate court.
Well, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Are you related to Pam?
I am. She's my mother.
Well, you better do her proud then.
I'm trying my best today. Thank you, Your Honor. So, excuse me. As Mr. Verner conceded, the contract was breached. But Mr. Verner is incorrect in that it was breached in only one way. It was breached in multiple ways. One way it was breached is by the obvious. Ms. Friend would tender her 634, and Mr. Friend sometimes would take a piece of that and send that on. That was a breach. Or he would not send it at all.
What about the tort?
The conversion?
Any tort that the court found to justify the punitive?
Yes, Your Honor.
Damages.
The 634 being kept and withheld by Mr. Friend was indeed conversion. Mr. Friend testified during the trial that some of the things he did with the monies that he either drew or kept were things like improve his home with an outdoor kitchen or, I think, hardwood floors. So while encumbering the awarded separate property of Mrs. Friend, he was improving the property, his property of his home, with those monies. And that is the conversion. But there's also the fraud. The email exchanges that Mr. Verner references, one in which Mr. Friend states exactly our point. He says, the decree says I have to apply that towards the loan, which I did. He was not squishy in whether he was really sending the money or not. He was flatly saying, I'm sending the money. And then to follow that up with, you'll just have to trust me.
What did she do in reliance on that? What forbearance did she exercise, or what action did she take or not take in reliance on those that representation to her?
Your Honor, until she learned the flat-out truth that he wasn't sending the monies on, Ms. Friend was refraining from trying to obtain or sell the house she was in. She was looking to either upgrade or move into another house. She knew that the Florida house still had to be sold before her 634 payments ceased. But what she was not aware, and that's why she started asking, was why won't you let me know what the balance is? Because I know that home equity line of credit is going to affect how I can get out from under this house that I'm living in. So her reliance was, I'm under an order, a court order, to pay these $634 per month. But also, I'm wanting to not find myself in a situation where the home equity line of credit is in default.
So her reliance was in continuing to tender the $634, and her reliance on his remarks was also in not pursuing a move or some other kind of refinancing on the house that would put her in a better circumstance.
That's right.
With regard to the house she was living in.
That's right, Your Honor. And she also relied in believing that the $204,000 amount was not growing. As Mr. Verner indicated, the 634 was supposed to be matched by Mr. Friend. So not only was Mr. Friend not sending over the 634 at times that Mrs. Friend was sending them to him, he was also refusing to match the 634, all with the understanding that we're to get this amount down.
And he said he was actually making the payments?
Oh, yes. And yes, ma'am. He says that here in these emails and in telephone conversations, as testified to. And, Judge, the issue relating to the conversion also goes to how Mr. Friend, knowing that the HELOC was the home equity line of credit, was encumbering Ms. Friend's separate property, intentionally drew against the HELOC to do improvements to his to perform and make improvements to his own home. That in and of itself was an act of conversion. So while it's not correct to say that you can convert real property. You certainly can convert the equity out of real property as done here. Mr. Friend, in essence, found an end around to the decree and said, okay, you get your home, the separate property. That's been awarded to you by the divorce. But what I'm going to do is continue to draw against the HELOC that is encumbering that home and improve mine so that you don't really ever have any remedy to get it back from me. And you'll have to pay it. You'll have to pay it back because if you don't, your house will get foreclosed on. So if Mr. Friend stops paying, which he did, the threat of foreclosure will come, and Ms. Friend will end up having to decide whether or not to pay for the outdoor kitchen and the wood floors or allow her house to be foreclosed on.
Just out of curiosity, in your opinion, did Mr. Friend have any fiduciary responsibility toward Mrs. Friend when she gave him the $634? Did that put him in a position of being a fiduciary, of having fiduciary responsibility?
In my opinion, yes, in so much as that they were having a continual relationship because they did have children together. And the decree in and of itself stated that she was to give it to him and then, in essence, trust him to pass it on to tender that payment, to basically be the conduit to make the payment to Bank of America. And so you have this ongoing relationship because there is the suit affecting the parent-child relationship that is still intact. They are in constant communication with one another about the children, but also money issues because they both went through some periods of unemployment. And so as typical in situations, you tend to, over the first 2 or 3 years after going through the divorce, things kind of settle down, and because we are these parents, we'll start co-parenting together, and there is some semblance of, I do need to trust you in some ways, you do need to trust me in some ways. And Tracy Friend trusted, and I believe rightfully so, that Mr. Friend would do what he said he would do as ordered to do in the decree, and that is to simply take my 634 and send it to Bank of America so that our amount can be reduced.
What concerns me, though, is that the equity in a home is not tangible property, and you can't convert intangible property.
Yes, Your Honor.
And I see the conversion of the designated segregated funds,
yes, Your Honor,
as a conversion, but in the court's findings and conclusions, the court based its findings on a conversion of equity, not on a conversion of segregated funds. So isn't the court bound, and aren't we bound to review the court's findings based on the findings of fact and conclusions of law that the court signed?
I think you are bound, Your Honor, yes. My argument would be that for example, the $19,000 that was drawn against the line of credit to pay the child support amount, that was one of the other things he did with the money. He had an arrearage in child support to the tune of around $19,000, and he took a draw against the HELOC and then paid that to the state disbursement unit to satisfy the arrearage.
Attorney General.
Yes, Your Honor. And my argument is that once that money became earmarked, in essence, for a use, then it was converted.
Then it was no longer intangible. So what you're saying is that even though the equity itself is intangible, when he drew against it and got a check for it,
that's right,
that made it tangible.
That's
at that
when
point.
We have cash. That's when
and
we
that's
have,
the act of conversion.
That's the act of conversion.
I see. Okay.
And that's when I'm going to decide to take this equity that's intangible, mm-hmm, and pay it to the state disbursement unit by check or other means. That's when I'm going to take this money from the HELOC and buy an outdoor kitchen with the cash, because I couldn't go to Home Depot or Lowe's and say, hey, I've got a home equity line of credit that is
for a different house,
but will you go ahead and just build my outdoor kitchen anyway? I don't have the cash right now. Home Depot and Lowe's wouldn't care they would only want the cash or whoever it was, the contractor that wanted the money. So he had to say, okay, I want the outdoor kitchen. Let me perform this action that I know, as he testified, that I know would encumber your separate property to get these things or get this benefit from, that ends up ultimately being in a tangible way. Also, Your Honor, I think it's worth noting that Mr. Friend acknowledged in his testimony that the HELOC was signed off by himself, and he forged his wife's signature on the HELOC. So that was one of the reasons that Ms. Friend didn't have the independent ability to be able to go ahead and check the balances or to do these other things. Now, as it relates to how do we get to the 177, or 170, yes, 177, in essence, what the court did was take the spreadsheet that had all of the payments, that was one of the exhibits in it, showed all of the payments during the history of the HELOC up to that point, and reduced the amount that was the 204 at the time of the divorce, and reduced that amount by what the amount would have been had the amounts been applied as Mr. Friend was supposed to do. And so this was not just a number just pulled out of the air. And that's why that number is not modifying the decree in any way. In essence, because Mr. Friend was tight-lipped about what is the current amount owed, Mr. Friend would not tell us how many draws he took specifically. We just owed these three, at least. But in essence, the court backdoored our way into it and said, okay, this is the amount, $204,000 was the amount at the time of the decree, and these are the payments that Ms. Friend made since then. And Judge Barnes didn't modify the decree. In essence, what she did was basically give Ms. Friend the credit for the payments that she made pursuant to the decree. And so the $177,000 was not just some number just pulled out of the air. And there is a basis for that number from the evidence and from the testimony. lastly, Your Honor, Ms. Friend in her petition states that all conditions preceding had been met. Mr. Friend did not, in his answer, deny that. And he also didn't mention it or deny it during the trial either. And the rule basically requires a denial. And without a denial, it is in essence waived. I'll argue, though, that the string of emails and the conversations as testified to by the parties indicates that a presentment was made, but that even if it did not, Mr. Friend waived his by not bringing it up in his answer and not bringing it up during the trial. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jimmy?
Just briefly, Your Honors, Mr. Dunlop said that Mr. Friend was using the money to improve the house, and I believe he was asked that and denied it, but the record will be authoritative. There was no testimony that he would threaten Ms. Friend that you'll have to pay this HELOC back. And in fact, Ms. Friend testified that she had never been notified of a foreclosure hearing and was not in foreclosure. So it does not appear that she was damaged in those respects. Your Honor also asked whether there's a fiduciary duty on the $634. I would suggest there's not, because it is governed by contract, clearly governed by contract, and therefore a breach of contract would be the remedy for that. As Your Honor pointed out, the findings of fact and conclusions of law are authoritative on evidentiary findings, and that Your Honor correctly pointed out, and I misspoke, that the conversion is limited to the HELOC, not the $634 payments. If that's correct, then there couldn't be punitive damages based on the $634 retention of part of those monies. Likewise, the argument that the house equity was converted, I would suggest, once again, runs afoul of the rule that intangible property can't be converted. He took money from the bank. supposedly he used it to improve his house and also pay some past due child support. If the court followed a rule like that, then any time someone improperly obtained money and used it to buy something physical, then there would instantly be a case of conversion. And I don't believe that's the law, even if, as Your Honor says, if the funds are segregated in somehow, because they weren't segregated from HELOC, they were draws taken. I think it would stretch the law to say that merely by taking funds from HELOC, they somehow become segregated and eventually become tangible property. So once again, I'd suggest that the appropriate course of action is to reverse the case, where Mr. Friend would have a judgment against him for the $13,000. The court would reassess the attorney's fees in light of these proceedings. And when the house in Florida is sold, an accounting should take place, at which point Mr. Friend would be responsible for complying with his obligations under the divorce decree for the money, well, the money he didn't pay from the 634 would already be a judgment against him. And he would also be accountable for the home equity line of credit, the draws that he took. That, I submit, would have been the appropriate course of action. And if the Florida house has not yet been sold, then I suggest it must wait until that time, because an accounting cannot take place until that event occurs. Once again, if the court has no questions of me, I'm finished.
What do you say about his argument that while equity in a home is intangible, and I can wrap my head around that, that once the bank or the lender puts a value on it and writes a check for it, that check becomes tangible and a reflection of the equity value, or at least some of the equity value, and therefore it can be converted at that point because it now becomes tangible property, whereas in the abstract, equity is not is intangible. It ceases to become abstract and becomes tangible.
Well, I'd suggest to the court, if that became the rule, if that is the rule, then every time a bank wrote a check to a person and that person did not use the funds for which the money was required to be used, then the bank could sue for conversion. I don't think the mere act of cutting a check, the point before was that the 634.
Well, but the person who owned the equity was clearly his ex-wife.
That's true.
Because that property was conveyed to her in the decree.
Yes.
So he didn't convert from the bank. He converted equity that had been reduced to a tangible form by virtue of a check that the lender wrote. And the conversion of that to some other improper use, the use of her funds, her equity, for his own means, seems to be pretty consistent with the theory of conversion to me.
Your Honor, I'm not saying that it was a correct or a right thing to do. I'm saying the divorce decree did not prohibit him from doing it, and it should have, in my view. But I think if you follow that path, that we don't know.
Well, the divorce decree may not have prohibited him from drawing on it, but didn't the fact that it was her home, her equity, prohibit him from doing it legally?
Well, I think
it may not be a breach of contract under the divorce decree,
right,
but nevertheless a wrongful act, because he didn't own the equity in that house.
Well, Your Honor, you speak one speaks of equity, ownership of equity. That's an amorphous term in and of itself. No one knows what the equity in a house is until it's sold.
But they sure do when the bank cuts a check for the equity.
If the argument relies on whether the bank cut a check, we don't know that from this record. We don't know how the money was delivered. Was it transferred to an account that he might have had at the bank? We just don't know.
Well, whether they cut a check or did an electronic fund transfer, they still valued the equity. And at that point, it was not a nebulous term any longer. It was actually a value was placed on it.
I understand the point you're making, Your Honor. I think, though, that would be stretching the law of conversion too far, respectfully. Thank you, Your Honor.
No questions.
Thank you. We appreciate your argument. You both did a good job and were very helpful. Your case is submitted. You're free to go about your business, or you can stay and listen to the next case if you want to. This court will be in recess briefly, and there will be a change of panels.